And you're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, back sitting in for Matt McNeil, who's on vacation I think all the way through next week as well. So I'll be sitting in again Monday through Thursday, and then next Friday, is it Jack Rice or somebody like that?
I think it's Andrew? Brett next Friday. Brett. Jack will be in later on.
Okay. I heard Jack yesterday for a little while. So we got it covered here. Matt, if you're listening, which you shouldn't be because you're on vacation, you should truly take a vacation from your show and not listen to it. So I hope you're the only person in Minnesota not listening to the show. So we are kind of, and it's Friday, and I thought it would be fun to celebrate a little bit. We're going to talk about things later on in the show, like the origins of why Awake is called Awake and things like that. You're probably wondering what I'm talking about, but you will find out if you keep listening. Not you, Matt. You don't. You're not listening. So another thing, though, we want to celebrate is Infrastructure Week. And we're talking about real Infrastructure Week, not Trump Infrastructure Week, which never happened.
It was going to be the most tremendous, biggest infrastructure ever, the likes of which no one has ever seen.
But it never happened. And now I think we're on our second Infrastructure Week, and we've actually got a bill, a $2,700 bill. And some of the details, they might be slightly different than this, but they were $65 billion for broadband, $66 for railways, $343,000 for roads and bridges. And the American Society of Civil Engineers says 43% of roads are in poor or bad condition. 42% of bridges are 50 or more years old. And we're speaking to you from Minneapolis, the place where just a little more than 13 years ago, the biggest and most driven on bridge in the whole state, in the whole area, the whole region, collapsed while people were on the bridge, including a school bus. It was unbelievable when it happened. But it happened, and it was because the bridge wasn't inspected properly. It was more than 40 years old, which was it's supposed to be its original lifespan. Now, 42% of bridges are 50 or more years old. And our entire system of roads and bridges was built starting in the 1950s. And throughout the, it took like 25 years to get the whole system built up. And then Republicans immediately insisted on not ever funding any maintenance for any of it. So it's in shambles. And we all know this. And but now we have an opportunity to build it back. And like President Biden says, we're going to build back better. And something that's extremely interesting that I discovered kind of in a fluky way, I'm going to explain in just a moment. But first, let me tell you what it's all about. There's an article in the New York Times, and it's titled, "Can Removing Highways Fix America's Cities?" And they've actually been doing this in some cities, Rochester, New York. The main freeway going right through the center of Rochester, New York, was built in the 1950s to speed suburban commuters and to and from downtown. And Rochester's inner loop destroyed hundreds of homes and businesses, replacing them with a broad concrete trench separated downtown from the rest of the city. That's happened in virtually all cities in America, including the Twin Cities. And but now, in Rochester, they're looking to repair the damage. They started by filling in the nearly mile-long section of the sunken road, slowly stitching a neighborhood back together. Today, visitors of the Inner Loop's eastern segment would hardly know a highway once ran beneath their feet. As mid-century highways reach the end of their lifespans, cities across the country are having to choose whether to rebuild or to reconsider them. And a growing number, like Rochester, are choosing to take them down. And this has been starting to show success in places like Rochester, New York. And so here's my little story about how I found out about this. My wife's side of our family had a family reunion out-of-towners came into town, and one of my sisters-in-law, her name is Mary, and she's always been involved in a lot of things having to do with climate change and things like that. And it's weird because we get in fights because she's a Trump supporter. No, she's not. She's opposite of a Trump supporter. Anyway, so I saw her on Wednesday night and asked what she was doing. And she said she was trying to tear down Highway 94. And I kind of thought, well, good luck with that. But then she explained it a little further. And it turns out that there's a whole thing going on right here in the Twin Cities. And so Mary is here. Mary Morse Marty is here, and also is Alex Burns. Alex has worked with the Sierra Club, but right now both Alex and Mary are volunteers for a group called the I-94 Stakeholders Coalition. So, hello. You can talk now.
Hello. It's so great to be here. Thanks, Todd.
Sure. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you guys to do a lot of the explaining here, but we all... starting about 5 years ago, I think, in the Historical Society, they had an exhibit talking about the Rondo, a neighborhood, which was a primarily black neighborhood that was right where Highway 94 is now. And Highway 94 was made throughout the 1960s, and they basically evicted everyone from their houses and tore the houses down, tore the whole neighborhood down, and built a freeway, and it tore the neighborhood in two parts. And, you know, things like generational, you know, you don't have your parents' home anymore because your parents' home just got torn down. So it's really a horrible interruption of a community. And so I'm going to let you guys talk about some of the ideas that are being floated and give us a little bit of a history of what's been going on in the last couple of years with the Department of Transportation and things like that.
Yeah, so right now here in the Twin Cities, you mentioned some of the examples of other places across the country. We have an opportunity to do a similar reimagining of our freeway here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So the Minnesota Department of Transportation is in the process of determining the future of I-94 from roughly downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis. And as you mentioned, the history of that corridor is rife with environmental injustice and racism. And Rondo was home to 80% of black residents in St. Paul. And the freeway was pretty much intentionally routed through that community and left it in shambles. So MnDOT has acknowledged that history. To a certain extent, they've branded this project Rethinking I-94. And so now we are at this point where we have to figure out what does Rethinking I-94 mean and what are we going to put back in its place.
Right. And it sounds like so far the Department of Transportation hasn't been very imaginative in their rethinking. They basically are like, well, let's just make the concrete newer. And is that right?
Yeah, that has been our perception so far. And and they're working through the process that every federal highway has to work through, which is an environmental impact statement process, or the NEPA process. And what we've found in these initial draft documents is that while they're branding this thing as Rethinking I-94, they're really not rethinking anything. And that kind of set off the alarms for us, for Mary and myself and others in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and is part of the reason we started to organize around this project.
Yes, and Mary, you mentioned the other night that you have some grant backing and things like that. So let's talk about just your organization and not just what you're doing, but what you have behind you.
Yeah, we've been an organization that has come together organically. I would say that. Alex is a volunteer. I'm a volunteer. I'm a resident of the community. There are other residents. There are other organizations. There are communities of color all along that corridor. And they're not always able to attend the official MnDOT activities. You know, MnDOT does outreach, and you can't find people when you're doing outreach from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. You know, and they do their best, I think, to talk to people. But this coalition that has come together really does represent the community, and that's why it's really exciting. I'm not sure how to talk about our funding, but we were lucky enough to receive some funding to help coordinate the coalition.
Yeah, and that's great. I have also noticed in my experience when I ran for office and things like that how difficult it is to reach out. You feel like you're reaching out, but and also with small business groups, there are so many benefits for small businesses, but no small business owners know about any of them. And that sounds like kind of what's going on here. I had no idea this was going on. In some of your materials, it said that MnDOT announced that they were going to do this better in 2015. That was 6 years ago. And I don't think very many people know that this is going on. Everyone knows that the freeway sucks and needs to get fixed, but nobody knows what's going on. Nobody, and I just find it really interesting about all these ideas. We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what some other cities are doing, some of the imaginative things that they've done, and what we can use as an example, and how you're going about trying to assist the Department of Transportation into using their imagination a little more. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. I always want to let the music play longer because it's usually pretty good music. Matt's got good taste in music. Matt's on vacation. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show. You're listening to the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. If you'd like to call in and ask questions of our guests, the number is 952-946-6205. And we are celebrating Infrastructure Week, actual Infrastructure Week. And I am talking to Mary Morse Marty and Alex Burns, who are on the I-94 Stakeholders Coalition. So yes, as Infrastructure Week and bigger infrastructure plans, we are talking about fixing I-94 between Minneapolis and St. Paul, which is highly needed. But what if we did it in a completely different way than what anybody has been thinking? What if instead of just having it like it is now, just fixed to the design from 53 years ago, why don't we redesign it and rethink it? So that's what Alex and Mary are working on. Alex, talk to us a little bit about some things that are going on successfully in this regard in other cities.
Yeah, so I think that's really the main reason why we brought this coalition together, was because we were frustrated with the engagement and the vision that MnDOT was bringing forward. Well, when there's cities all across the country and across the world that have successfully removed and rethought their freeways. So this is our opportunity in Minnesota and in the Twin Cities to do the same thing. And it's been successful in other places. A few examples in Milwaukee here in the Midwest, they took out a freeway spur that ended up being the new basketball stadium where they celebrated the championship this year, the Deer District. Mm-hmm. That all used to be a freeway where that development was. You mentioned Rochester. That's an ongoing project. Syracuse,
New York. Rochester, New York.
Rochester, yeah. New York. Yes. Syracuse, New York as well is also reconsidering their urban freeways. And then San Francisco, if anyone's ever been to San Francisco.
Yeah, the Embarcadero, which was damaged pretty heavily in the earthquake.
Yeah.
They decided to tear it out. And now, instead of having this elevated freeway in front of their incredible waterfront, they have development and tax money coming in and commerce. It's just fantastic.
And I think one more in South Korea, in Seoul. I think my favorite example, if you look up pictures of this, it's amazing. There was an expressway through Seoul that carried over 100,000 cars a day, which is a lot. That's on the scale of I-94. Mm-hmm. And it was in the footprint of a stream that ran through the city. And the mayor made the decision to remove and restore the stream. So it's an urban creek, like a linear park. and it's stunning. And it's become one of the more popular places in the city, and they haven't had any traffic problems afterward.
Yeah, in this article that I was reading from a little bit earlier from the New York Times, if you go online and look at it, they have photos, aerial photos of a lot of cities from before the freeways were built in the 50s and 60s, and they just ripped out right through the middle of neighborhoods. And of course, they always pick the poor black neighborhoods because they don't want to disrupt the rich white people, especially in the 50s and 60s. And so here in St. Paul, of course, the famous Rondo neighborhood that wasn't talked about until very recently, kind of like a lot of other things Americans are learning about our history. So why don't we move on to some of the ideas that you do have as suggestions to MnDOT to get started on them using their imagination to rebuild in a better way?
Yeah, let me start as a resident. I can walk to I-94 in under 10 minutes from my house. And the experience of living near a highway when you are in the city is that there are feeder roads, Creighton, Snelling, Riverside, these become highways to the highway. So they really decrease the livability of your neighborhood. I think one of the ideas that we have is to slow the traffic and to, if not fill in the trench, possibly, put in a bike highway, put in a slow speed boulevard, consider more north-south connections, create opportunities for new development, housing, retail, commercial, industrial. We're not using the space very effectively, and it harms our city's tax base.
And it also, I'm familiar with the area you're talking about, and people who live on the south side of the freeway, they don't have easy access to all the commercial places, like right on University Avenue and things like that. Back in the old days, you could walk to a restaurant or the bookstore on Snelling and University, and now you'd have to get across the freeway. So everybody gets in their cars and goes across a bridge, and there's only a handful of bridges, so they're full. And so would this be done in a way that it wouldn't be such a barrier?
And absolutely. And I think that's why we're specifically focused on this corridor, because the story is the same for others in Minneapolis as well. I-94 severed North Minneapolis, 35W destroyed the 38th Street business corridor in South Minneapolis. It's the same story, but this one in particular, this corridor, we think that it could be reconstructed in a way that would continue to provide transportation access. You could bus rapid transit right through the middle of the trench, providing convenient access to downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul. You could do the bike highway. You could extend the Midtown Greenway to St. Paul, which has been discussed, and improving that north-south access. We've had transportation experts talk about this. We can accommodate the transportation demand in a way that improves air quality, reduces climate emissions, and gives this land back to the community.
Yeah, another thing, too, Mary talks about living right by the freeway. A distance of maybe 5 blocks from the freeway. And being at your house, you can still hear the cars on the freeway.
Yes.
I mean, it's remarkable how at night I can hear cars on Highway 12. That's a couple miles from my house, and I can still hear the cars. And, I don't like that. I'm very focused on sound, and I love to sit outside in the quiet. And it's never quiet by a freeway. And so there's noise pollution. There's also air pollution. Talk about, do you have some statistics on air pollution type of measures, how this might improve? For one thing, just so everyone knows, this is just getting started. So I might be asking you questions that you haven't developed yet.
No. Well, without providing specific statistics, I can tell you that if you looked up a map of air pollution in the Twin Cities, it would follow the ribbons of the highways in the metro area. And this infrastructure, I-94, it's a ribbon of poison, essentially, that impacts those that live within a half mile to a mile of the corridor. And there's a number of schools, Maxfield Elementary, Central High School, daycares, you name it. These kids are being exposed to disproportionate levels of air pollution, and it's showing up in rates of asthma, and later on in life, and things like lung cancer, even dementia. It's really insidious, and there's been some solutions talked about, like, you know, could you add more bridges? Could you do a land bridge or a freeway cap or something like that? But the reality is the only way to address impacts like air pollution is to deal with the freeway corridor itself. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're focused on.
And another thing, it's when you really stop and think about it, I think, and again, the reason I wanted to have you guys on was because nobody knows about this and nobody's really starting to think about this stuff yet. And so the freeway system is ancient. It's 60 years old. And why would we want to just fix it? Why would we want to invest tons of money to just fix it to a design that needs to be changed? We're going to electric vehicles and things like that. Why do we want to have a road system that does not accommodate whatever is coming next? We need to plan ahead. And another thing I was going to say is I have a motorcycle. And when you're on a motorcycle, you really notice how dirty the roads are. Oil all over the place. And, you know, cars driving in one spot like that for years and years, the ground is probably just completely ruined with oil and gas and exhaust
tire wear, particulates from tire wear and brake wear. That's never going to go away, even when our whole world is electrified.
Right.
You know, it's not going to help. I wanted to bring up the example of Auckland, New Zealand.
Okay. We're going to take a break.
Awesome.
So we're going to talk about New Zealand when we come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That's what I was going to say. Now I don't know what to say. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on You Heard Andrew Say It, AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. And we've got a couple of guests here. We're talking about building back better. I-94 needs to at least get fixed, but why would we fix it when we can build it back better? And I've got Mary Morse Marty and Alex Burns here. They are volunteering for a brand new group, doesn't even have a website or anything yet, but they're getting it up and running. It's called the I-94 Stakeholders Coalition. And when we left, Mary, you wanted to tell a story about an example of a well-done building back better.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Yeah. In Auckland, New Zealand, they decided that they wanted to make it faster to go on transit in their highway trench than it would be to drive. So they put in these new dedicated transit lanes, and they are running 250 buses per hour through these transit lanes. When you think about I-94, I think a lot of people are concerned, well, where does the traffic go? Mm-hmm. And they benefited the people on transit to the extent that nobody would even bother driving. It takes an hour to get through this highway when it takes a half hour to jump on the bus. I love that. We're so good at bus rapid transit here. We could do that all up and down the corridor.
Yes, and actually your son and I were talking at another family gathering a couple of years ago about how, you know, he was talking about why would we have a future where everyone has to own a car? He wants to not even own a car. He wants cities to be built and, you know, communities to be built in a way that you don't have to own a car. Think about, you know, I mean, a car is like only second to your house in your, you know, investment and cost in your whole life. And, you know, I mean, I like my new Tesla. It's really fun having that car. But really, we shouldn't all have cars. We need parking lots then. If more people used the, I mean, that's the whole idea of mass transit. We'd, you know, the cities would be a lot better if we didn't have to have half of the city dedicated to parking cars. So anyway, Alex, you mentioned this Sierra Club. What is something that people can do to, who are listening to this right now, who are interested in maybe playing a part or you know, talking to MnDOT themselves and trying to promote this type of thing?
Yeah, for sure. So as you mentioned, this effort is still in the early stages, but we're hoping to get a website built soon and find tangible places that people can plug in. But in the meantime, if folks want to learn more about the project, they can go to MnDOT's website and just search Rethinking I-94, and that'll get them all the information about the project. And it, for the Sierra Club perspective, like how I participate in this process, if they go to sierraclub.org/Minnesota, they can find all the information they can about getting involved with our efforts.
Okay. And MnDOT, by the way, is, of course, the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Their website is www.dot.state.min.us. That's confusing, I know. But if you just go, if you just punch in MnDOT into Google, that's what I just did, and I'm on their website right now. So MnDOT has periodic meetings about this, right? Where they're trying to reach out to the community. Can maybe find information about that on their website. Do you have any, what have they done so far? You mentioned earlier, Mary, that the community doesn't, you know, they're all at work when MnDOT's trying to have meetings about this. Do you know what they have been doing?
Yeah, they do. They participate in a variety of ways, but sometimes you'll see them tabling at community events and stuff. But the main meetings are published on their website, and They're about once a month. They have a policy advisory committee that folks can testify at, and also a community leaders meeting that meets once a month. So all those meetings should be listed on the MnDOT website.
Okay, and I would imagine you are planning on going to those meetings and being at least keeping track of what's going on there?
Definitely, yeah. We make sure to attend all the meetings, and also Mary mentioned, a lot of these meetings aren't accessible, so we're focused on creating other spaces and more accessible hours during all times of the day, virtual and in person, to give people an opportunity to plug in and have feedback and to co-create the vision for this corridor.
Okay, well, this group is brand spanking new, doesn't have a website or anything yet, does have some funding behind it. It's all of that is actually being set up to a degree that we don't know quite enough about it even to talk about it on this show right now. But it sounds good to me. It sounds like the group has a good future where, you know, it's sustainable and can play a part in rebuilding I-94 in a much better way than it is currently. Alex, you mentioned earlier a timeline that this is supposed to be going on.
Yeah, that's the thing about these transportation projects is they last a long time. You said it started in 2015, and it has a few years ahead of it. Right now, MnDOT is preparing these draft environmental documents, and we expect them to be posted for public comment sometime late this year or early next year. And so that's the big timeline. I wouldn't imagine construction would start anywhere in the next few years, but there's some big deadlines coming up. So we'll definitely keep you updated on the next steps.
Okay, yeah. And at least to the degree that I'm able to, when I'm periodically on this radio station, I will make sure and update all of our listeners. But thanks to both of you, Alex Burns and Mary Morse Marty, who are part of the I-94 Stakeholders Coalition, talking about building I-94 back better than it is now. So thanks a lot, both of you, for coming in.
Thanks, Todd. It's been fun.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Are we going to take a break, Andrew? No, we're not going to take a break. Okay. So the next thing, if you guys want to just sit here with me for a little bit until the next break, or if, you know... I was going to talk, actually, because I thought this was kind of related, and I'm super into electric cars. And we were talking about the Clean Car Initiative in Minnesota with Kelly Morrison earlier in an interview I did a few weeks ago, because she was on the committee in the legislature. And some points that people don't talk about is without the Clean Car Initiative, there was actually a car dealership that is on the border near Canada in Minnesota. And he wrote an op-ed, and he was talking about that if we don't do this Clean Car Initiative, people like him will miss opportunities to be able to sell electric cars in the next couple ensuing years, and because other states that are doing it will have all the electric cars for sale, and he won't be able to get his hands on any. He's already got people waiting in line for the new F-150 Lightning, the Ford pickup electric car. And he's already got people even waiting for the new Mustang. And so he was making the point that if we don't do this new car initiative, it's going to hurt car dealerships. Of course, the Republicans are saying that, it would, if we don't do it, it'll hurt car dealerships. The Republicans are saying opposite. Again, something to rethink. We have a call I want to get in maybe while you guys are still here because it's related to the I-94. Lynette from Chaska is calling in.
Yeah, hi, Todd. Thanks for filling in for Matt. You're doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
I was thinking when you guys were talking about that, that's so exciting. And thank you for talking about it because, yeah, how do we know these things unless, you know, we find out somewhere else? I'm going to look into that. And I just wanted to mention that you're making me think of when my grandmother lived in Minneapolis in the 1920s, I was asking her, you know, like one day when she got a car and stuff like that. She goes, well, I didn't really need a car when I was in Minneapolis at the time because their streetcars went everywhere mm-hmm. until, of course, they ripped those out in the 1950s to make it all about the car.
Yep.
So,
there was a big conspiracy. That part of that was funded by Greyhound Bus and some tire companies. And I believe the mayor of St. Paul went to prison. Is that Mary knows about this?
I'm thinking GM was involved.
GM, maybe.
Yeah,
we shouldn't be implicated when we don't know what we're talking about. but it was bigger than just somebody deciding to rip it out. It was a conspiracy to make car companies and tire companies make more money. So they did rip out all of the rails. And we had a great, in the 1920s and 30s, the Twin Cities area was actually kind of growing in like Chicago and New York. We probably would have kind of more legitimate, bigger cities with better transit right now. But it all got erased because of these greedy scandals. So anyway, thanks a lot for calling in, Lynette. Did you have any questions, further questions?
Well, not yet. No, I just,
okay.
I'm listening and I'm taking on the information and nope, I just wanted to inject that as well. So thank you.
Great. Yeah. I'm glad you did. Cause that's another thing that people don't realize. So thanks for calling in, Lynette. I was going to go on to talk a little bit more about some new news about electric cars that Biden, of course, he's pushing even more so on the shift to electric vehicles. This is, again, from the New York Times, and it's also in today's front page of the Star Tribune. And President Joe Biden on Thursday announced a multi-step strategy aimed at rapidly shifting Americans from gasoline-powered cars and trucks toward electric vehicles, a central part of his plan to reduce the pollution that is heating the planet. He realizes that if we don't do this electric car thing, it's going to be I hate to put it this way, but we're not going to make it. Earth is going to be rid of us. Earth isn't going to end, but people will end. Biden, in his first restoring and slightly strengthening auto mileage standards to the levels that existed under President Barack Obama. They were weakened, of course, under the Trump administration. Biden wants to immediately get them back to where they were. The new rules, which would apply to vehicles in the model year 2023, would cut about one-third of the carbon dioxide produced annually by the United States and prevent the burning of about 200 billion gallons of gasoline over the lifetime of the cars. The administration next plans to draft even more stringent pollution rules for both passenger vehicles and heavy-duty trucks that are designed to compel automakers to ramp up sales of electric vehicles. This is, again, we're starting to get the sticks out. We've been using too many carrots, and we're starting to get the sticks out. So if we make it more difficult for the car companies to keep building combustion engines, they're going to more quickly go to electric cars. And this is happening really quickly. I've mentioned this before, but the F-150 is the top-selling vehicle in the country. And Ford makes an immense amount of money on just that one vehicle, and they are already shifting that vehicle to all electric. You can get them. You can put an order in for them now. And they also, you know, their kind of cool, sporty Mustang now is electric. It's more like an SUV, but it's all electric. And more and more car companies are coming out. Tesla, of course, has mastered the electric car. I have a Tesla, and I've gone on long trips, and it's really easy. You can go 350 miles on one charge. A lot of people don't realize how versatile electric cars have become over the years. So, and Biden is really pushing for it. So let's take a break, and we'll come back in a few minutes on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.